Welcome to a new episode of EFZ Talking Finance. In today's episode, we explore a topic that is gaining increasing importance: the evolving strategic role of treasury within organizations and how the collaboration between CFOs and treasury functions is changing. Our discussion is based on a recent study that provides insightful perspectives on the priorities and challenges faced by CFOs and treasury professionals. We will touch on topics such as rising market volatility, the growing importance of liquidity management, and how finance functions can work more closely together to create real value. I'm very pleased to welcome an expert in corporate treasury and finance transformation to the show today. Joining us is Sophie Boyle, a treasury consultant at Zanders and FCT qualified treasurer with more than 15 years experience spanning corporate treasury and finance transformation. She has built a strong advisory background through her work with firms such as PwC and Zanders, combined with a hands-on experience within corporate treasury functions, guiding organizations as they evolve and strengthen their capabilities in an increasingly complex landscape. In addition, she is a trainer on the Association of Corporate Treasurers, A2Z of Treasury Program, helping to develop the next generation of treasury professionals. Originally from the UK and now based in Switzerland, Sophie offers a well-rounded perspective across treasury and transformation initiatives, complemented by her entrepreneurial experience as the founder of a legal tech company. So, Sophie, it's great to have you with us today.
Thank you very much, Thomas, for that warm introduction. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
So, as mentioned, we came together today to talk about a recent study conducted by Zanders. Can you give us some background about the respective survey you did?
So we designed a survey. We targeted responses from the CFO and roles from within the office of the CFO. So that's finance directors, treasurers, treasury team members, FP&A, controlling, accounting, to really examine the shift that's happening at the moment in finance with everything that's going on in the world.
Yeah, so this already leads me to the first part of our discussion, and that's about the strategic rise of treasury, which you had a closer look at. So one of your headline findings is that treasury's importance has increased significantly. So on my side, I like to hear that because I'm also into treasury also from a, developing side in order to come up with the correct training for treasurers. And what's driving the shift of this increased importance?
Yeah, sure. So there's a few things driving this shift. And the key thing to know is that they're all pointing at one thing, and that is that treasury is now at the center of financial resilience. So one thing, for example, interest volatility. We've had years of stability, but now we're seeing a lot of movement in rates. And this has led to funding decisions being much more complex. For example, you know, if you think about refinancing, if you do it at one point in time versus another point in time, that can have a significant impact on cost. And so timing, market access, things like this have become a lot more strategic. This is playing into Treasury's remit. Then you have things like banking sector instability, refinancing risk. You have regional bank failures. We see that happening at the moment. And this puts more emphasis on counterparty risk and liquidity diversification. And then at the same time, you have companies at the same time facing large volumes of debt, which are maturing over the next couple of years. So that bunches together a lot of debt maturities from the different companies. And it means refinancing is no longer routine, but it needs active planning. It needs scenario analysis. Again, that sits with Treasury. You have cyber threats, payment fraud. Treasury is on the front line of managing all these risks. In some sectors, the fraud rates are extremely high. Interestingly, it's where there's a lot to gain or where decision-making is very fast. So online gambling, gaming sites, banking, crypto, these industries. And it's making controls and governance a lot more critical. One more thing, liquidity resilience. So companies need to know that they can withstand the shocks that are happening in the world at the moment, whether that's market volatility, supply chain disruption, funding constraints. Treasury is really at the key of, like, in a key position of all of these different factors playing in. So yes, this is pushing Treasury really from being a control function to being like a pillar of stability, enabling stability, and also helping decision making across a business.
Yeah, that's also my intention or my view on the topic. We have increased volatility, we have a lot of new threats, new developments from the outside. So is it then still just a reaction to recent volatility, or is this increased importance really a structural change within the whole finance function? What's your take on that?
I would say it's both. You have a cyclical element, but you also have a structural shift, and these are both happening at the same time. As we just discussed, there's a lot that's accelerated Treasury's strategic role, and then suddenly Treasury has become more of a board level discussion. Some of the things, you know, liquidity, funding, counterparty risk, the board is now interested in these things. And then that naturally pulls Treasury towards strategic decision making. But I would agree with you that there is a structural change happening as well. And this side, I think, doesn't just go away when the market stabilizes. So Treasury is becoming more strategic because they have data available, there is digitalization. You now have the possibility of things like real-time cash visibility. There's APIs delivering data. You've got advanced forecasting tools. And so this means Treasury actually can provide insights. They're not just reporting yesterday's cash position, but really forward-looking, useful insights. And this makes scenario analysis possible. And then things... So when the CFO can have a better picture, they can make funding decisions, risk decisions, capital allocation decisions earlier and also with more confidence.
Yeah, and I think those are highly important things, to have a forward-looking treasury department or treasury function and to leverage the data which you already have at hand to make a proper use of it. And as you mentioned, like having a support role for data-driven decision-making from a financial perspective, this makes a lot of sense to go into this direction, although I think it's not so easy to achieve. But these are very important points. So from your experience, is Treasury now truly positioned as a strategic partner already, or is it still underutilized in many organizations? What's your view?
I would love to say yes, but I see that most or a significant number of Treasury teams are not fully there yet. So historically, Treasury was always seen as operational support. And it takes a bit of a mentality shift to move away from that. You still see a lot of teams, treasury teams, they're spending time on operational things like cash positioning, payments, debt administration. And these are all critical. You know, these things have to happen, but it's not where the real value sits. Treasury is also sometimes brought into decisions pretty late once the direction is already set. Where Treasury becomes a strategic partner is where their insights are integrated earlier. So particularly around capital allocation and risk. I give you an example. So if a company is considering an acquisition, Treasury can give key insights on funding structure, liquidity impact, market timing, and that can really make a difference. Or another example, in a volatile environment, Treasury's view on liquidity buffer or refinancing risk, this can shape the business's view of how much risk they are taking and how much risk they are willing to take. Mm-hmm. So, it's not really just about Treasury doing more. It's about connecting what they already do, what they already know, to strategic planning and, positioning themselves as a strategic partner.
It's interesting that you mentioned this because this year we also have a Treasury Summit in September and the title is Unlocking Value. Mm-hmm. So it's a really good fit what you mentioned by creating real value, creating value, providing insights and helping to enhance risk management. I think these are very important aspects in order to help the company move forward from a financial perspective. And also,
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the future, and companies that do this will have a competitive advantage compared to those that don't.
Mm-hmm. This leads me also to our next kind of chapter, which is that a treasurer is not operating isolated in his own world. He's always embedded in a company. And one of the most important other roles which a treasurer is working together is the CFO. And you also shed some light on this kind of relationship and priorities. So CFO versus treasurer is our next discussion topic. And we could title it One Agenda, Two Perspectives. So they largely agree on priorities, and you made some really nice graphs. we linked the study into the show notes. And but you emphasize different aspects, and how did that came through in the report? So what were your findings on this?
Yes. So what we saw from the report very clearly is that CFOs and treasurers, they are aligned on the core priorities, things like liquidity, capital structure, cost efficiency, digital transformation. This they agree on, but they rank them differently. So CFOs, they tend to prioritize cost optimization, transformation. Treasurers have more emphasis or weight on liquidity, cost of funding, things like this. I mean, liquidity, for example, it's important to both, but for treasurers, it's of course number one, and CFOs, it's slightly lower down the list.
It was like number one for treasurers as usual, but like number three for CFOs in the report. Yeah,
indeed, and this makes a lot of sense because treasurers, it's their bread and butter. It's they have day to day exposure to this. They need to manage this fully.
Maybe I also, if I may add here, I went on the respective graph, and from a CFO, it's more like having top priority number one is like cost optimization and efficiency. And this second one is like more going into the digital transformation overall of the company and the CFO function. Just to clear why it's only number three, because there are other priorities on top on the list for typical CFOs.
Yes, absolutely. But there's the interplay between, because you know you cannot have cost optimization if you don't have good forecasting. Mm-hmm. So this is how they support each other, and this is how the treasurer can have a strategic impact on the CFO's top priorities.
Yes. Okay. So we have this difference. We have these different priorities. What does this tell us about how the CFO office, if we look at this organization and call it CFO office, how does it actually operate in practice?
Yeah, so what we see, what the report highlights is that the CFO office, it has kind of two different perspectives, but they are very complementary. So it's one side is strategic and one side is more operational. Not to say that Treasury is only operational, but they have the operational lever which they can use to be strategic. So on one hand, the CFO, of course, is focused on the bigger picture. They're looking at the long-term strategy, the enterprise performance, how the business grows. So they need to think more about where to invest and respond to the immediate market challenges, how to position the company, that kind of thing. Whereas the treasurer, on the other hand, they have the real-time financial mechanics, if you like. They are making the strategy possible, and this is why they need to focus more on liquidity, funding, cost of funding, making sure that the company can meet its obligations as and when they fall due, So you have a natural division of roles in that sense, with the CFO setting direction and then Treasury enabling the business to move in an agile way, efficiently towards the CFO's direction.
It makes a lot of sense, yes, and nicely put in an agile way.
Imagine like a panther, you know, like moving agile through the jungle.
That would be great to move in a fashion like this. So in your view, this divergence, is it healthy or could it create also some blind spot when we have the strategic and the more operationally focused view?
It's definitely healthy, but up to a point. The difference in perspective can actually be a strength. You have, for example, you have one side focusing on the long-term strategy and performance, and then the other time is really the other side is grounded in liquidity, in funding, in risk. And this can be a powerful combination. However, the challenge comes when the two perspectives are not connected. That's where you can have a blind spot. For example, if a CFO underestimates certain financial risks, or if that can happen if Treasury is not pulled into strategic decisions early enough. An example I really like this came through very clearly in the report, that the CFO is very focused on cost efficiency. And this makes complete sense, but you have to think about Treasury's perspective that if the cost cutting or cost efficiencies affect their automation or their risk management, this is how a blind spot can develop. Mm-hmm. It limits their.
They can interfere what they are doing to a certain extent. Yes. Yeah, this makes.
So yeah, the different views are not the issue, but it's the possible lack of coordination which is really the issue.
Yeah. And that's also one of my key insights, being active in a few years of treasury management, this coordination amongst all the finance functions in detail, so more accounting, looking back, having controlling, looking forward, like more than 1 year or even a mid-term planning horizon, and treasury within this spot in between, to a certain extent, having this real-time cash and liquidity in the focus, and looking like 12 months into the future, also especially from a liquidity perspective, this makes a lot of sense and needs a lot of cooperation within the whole CFO office or CFO organization.
Yeah, absolutely.
This leads me to the next topic, which I kind of highlighted and would like to discuss with you due to the survey. So it's about forecasting volatility and financial resilience, which were already mentioned earlier on as one of the kind of main reasons for the shift, which we see that treasury becomes more and more important. And one finding was highly interesting in my eyes, amongst many, is that forecasting accuracy and market volatility are two sides of the same problem. So what did you mean by that? Could you elaborate on that?
I love this point. So what we mean by that is CFOs and treasurers, they're listing these different problems, but they're kind of listing the same problem. CFOs, they see volatility at a macro level, so they're looking at market uncertainty, geopolitical risk, and treasurers are also seeing that, but they're experiencing it in a more direct way. So they're seeing it through forecasting errors or liquidity gaps or unexpected cash movements, and it's basically the same problem. So the problem is, how do you translate uncertainty externally into your internal financial forecasts? How do you get that visibility? Because, you know, I'm sure you agree that volatility is only an issue if it cannot be accurately reflected, if it cannot be planned for in scenario planning.
I would also add stress tests, being sure what happens, what could happen, being kind of prepared. If you expect a certain market movement, then you can prepare yourself for that as a treasury organization. But if it comes highly unexpected, then you're running into a problem.
Yes, indeed. Depending on the level, that's the size of the problem, right?
Yeah.
The solution is really connecting the external shocks into your internal planning, making sure, I think as well, that forecasts are dynamic. They're not static, but they really are, scenario-based. And then you can see the impact and you can plan for it.
Yes. And why has this forecasting suddenly become such a strategic capability for finance teams?
This is because the pace of decision-making and the uncertainty of the world has fundamentally changed. We won't go into why now, but I think we all agree that. But finance teams are really expected to support faster decision-making, and not only that, but in a crazy world, in a more dynamic environment. And you cannot do this with, backwards looking data. Do you need real time? That's another question. That can be a whole other podcast, but maybe real time, near real time visibility, or just full visibility across the organization would really help.
That's not the same as real-time payments, but this also, we could do another whole podcast on this, whether it's necessary to have real-time payments, but real-time visibility on your positions can be very helpful if we see a lot of fast shifts going on around in the world. And also we have had these tariff shocks lately. They're not over yet, I dare to say, and we have geopolitical uncertainty, so it's good to be forecasting quite accurately or dynamically, or as you put it earlier on, agile. I think that's an important characteristic for a modern finance team or a treasury department.
These things you mentioned, they've actually increased the value of getting the forecast right. When everything is stable, the small inaccuracies don't really, it doesn't lead to anything. But, if a forecasting gap turns into a big liquidity issue, then there's real money behind that. Mm-hmm. It's cost.
Mm-hmm. That's can create the value we have already talked on. So another question from your experience, what are the biggest weaknesses in how companies approach forecasting today?
The top one for me is fragmented data. So forecasts, they pull in data from multiple systems across the business, maybe the ERP, the TMS, the business units also have a different way of doing it. And so this makes it difficult to get one single golden source of truth, Then you also have a disconnect between treasury and FP&A. So treasury is focused on cash and liquidity, and FP&A is more P&L and budgets, and the two are not always linked. And so then there's a gap between what the business is planning, but then what actually happens in terms of cash. Another thing, and I think actually, I wonder 5 years, 10 years, we'll look back at this and laugh, but actually manual processes, that there's a huge reliance still on Excel spreadsheets.
Yeah.
This makes forecasting very time consuming. It's difficult to scale. It's also tricky to update, and especially if you're trying to be in a dynamic, a fast-moving environment, it doesn't cut it. So it's not about the lack of effort or the lack of time, but it's the integration and the scalability of the forecast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would like to summarize the main weaknesses you see are, first of all, fragmented data, the disconnect also to other departments or teams like FP&A, and you also have like manual processes still a lot in time. That you always hear that the treasury management system number one still is Microsoft Excel. And I know it's kind of handy to have your own calculations and you can see what's going on, but still it doesn't add this interconnection you mentioned, and it's not this straight through processing, and you're not as efficient and are not as scaled as you could be in the end. I think that's an important point to mention. That's what we are also diving into in our courses at university, which I feel are very important to have a really good conceptual setup in the first place, and then being not that manual, but having time to create value, to think about more strategic points, as you mentioned earlier.
Exactly. You get the foundation right and then you can build on it.
Yeah. So this was already like 3 points you could try to enhance your finance function or treasury department in the future. Within your study, you also went into the future finance leader, as you could call it. And if we're now having a look into the future, 5 to 10 years, what would you mention as the skills which then define the next generation of treasury and finance leaders?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so I had a bit of fun reading, you know, looking at the graphs and interpreting the data, and I came to the conclusion that if you're building your perfect humanoid, you want to combine traditional finance experience, of course, yes, but with also data skills, data analytics, technology, savvy know-how, and a much more enterprise-wide strategic view. I pick out a few examples from the reports. We saw that data science and analytics will become core. That's what the report tells us. So finance leaders, they won't just have to understand numbers, but they'll have to understand how to interpret data, how to build scenarios, how to generate these forward-looking insights. And to do that, they're going to need technological understanding or savviness, you know. Mm-hmm. Not saying everyone needs to go out and learn Python, but they need to understand at a basic level, how does a TMS work? How can it be used to give the right insights? What does real-time data mean for me, for my organization? Where can I use APIs to be more efficient? I think an interesting part actually in the report is that there is all this focus on finance transformation, but the collaboration with the IT departments is still very low. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this gap needs to be closed. There needs to be business partnering more across the organization and using each other's skills to build something bigger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the IT department should be one of your best friends if you're working in treasury, because today it's really so much a technical function with using treasury management systems, or especially one TMS, which you should know by heart in detail and know how it works. You also mentioned Python coding. Mm-hmm. Today. There is an interesting development that you can be vibe coding. Maybe you already heard of this mm-hmm. term, that you have no idea of the language itself, but you are able to code with the help of kind of AI tools. Maybe, I don't know whether you also have a view on the whole AI angle in this, when we dive into the future, in the next generation.
Yes, I think there's a lot that AI can be used for. There's, you know, the classic use cases. You know, forecasting is a big one. I read something very interesting recently that if you think about what AI does, it can automate boring tasks. But, you know, humans, they need a certain level of engagement. They need a certain number of tasks on their plate to have the right level of concentration. And I give you an example, air traffic controllers. Mm-hmm. If the airspace is too quiet, they will actually combine different airspaces to get them the right level of...
The right level of input, which you need to sort out in order to not to fall asleep.
Exactly.
To put it like this.
Yes.
A bit bluntly. Okay.
So we need to be very careful with AI. It needs to be doing the right things. Mm-hmm. We also need to consider that people like to finish tasks, and this can give motivation to then you know, do the next thing. It can be a bit of a downtime to do your expenses, for example. Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting everyone.
I do not like that to do all the time, but yeah, I have to. But you're right. So I sometimes also enjoy doing tasks which I feel are not that hard, but give me some kind of relaxation by doing something which is not using too much kind of cognitive power, which can be kind of depleted. And therefore, it needs to be the right level. And now, if we're going back to our future question, how should CFOs and treasury leaders start to prepare their teams for this shift? So what can they do? I mean, the whole CFO organization, or also if you're kind of a group treasurer, have a team of 2, 3, 4, 5 treasury experts, what can you do to prepare for the shift?
Yeah, I think there's three key areas to focus on. The first one is digital and analytics. So the teams need to be comfortable with working with data. You know, as we said earlier, using forecasts, interpreting the insights, not just, you know, churning out the same old report, but understanding how it's built and how it can be used. The second is closer collaboration. So across the finance functions, the report shows actually one of the biggest gaps between Treasury and FP&A. So you can get a much clearer view of liquidity or improve your processes with collaboration with the right department. And actually, on the collaboration, we were speaking about collaboration and IT earlier. I actually think it might be a good idea to explore having a IT treasury person, so a dedicated IT person just for treasury, because it is different to the rest of the business.
Maybe I've heard of this example, that also treasury teams in Switzerland, which were not the smallest teams, but they looked for or hired dedicated SAP specialists, which then could make the connects to SAP in order to get the data right and also take out the right data points for which are relevant from a treasury perspective. And therefore, this collaboration, I think it's really important. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. But we are two treasury people sitting here saying treasury is important. But
we know that this connects to IT is for the future really, really key.
Yes.
To success. So one of my last questions, or even my last question, would be, if you had to highlight one insight from the report that finance leaders should reflect on, what would this be?
Yes, well, I invite everyone to read the report and confirm that I've picked out the right thing. But I would emphasize that Treasury at the moment is in the middle of a transition. We're moving from operational support to really strategic partnerships. And I think a lot of organizations haven't started that shift yet. So it's very important to realize that Treasury has the data. They have visibility on liquidity, things that are essential but are not always integrated into the strategic decision making. And this is an opportunity for Treasury. It's actually a very exciting time to be in Treasury. And what makes it even more relevant is that it's actually easier than it's ever been. Treasury has always had this data, but now the barriers are coming down, and Treasury is optimally placed to use their insights to help decision making and to drive strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also would fully agree that this is a very, very important point to have this transition to a strategic partnership, strategic partner of the management, of the CFO, as a treasury department. It's moving more and more away from day-to-day operation. I know they are very important. They need to work, but I think you would agree that this needs to be kind of automated, and then the shift can also set free some resources you already have to do more of the strategic thinking, strategic work, enabling better decisions in the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, so I think that's a nice final word to conclude with you, Sophie. Thank you very much for sharing your insights with us today. It was a real pleasure having you on the show. And as mentioned earlier on, the link to the detailed report will be provided in the show notes. And therefore, thanks again for being here and your time.
Thank you very much for having me, Thomas.
And thanks to all of you for listening to this episode of EFZ Talking Finance. If you enjoyed the discussion, feel free to subscribe to our podcast and share it also with your network. We look forward to welcome you back for the next episode. Until then, take care, stay ahead in finance and treasury.